Thank you for being an incredible supporter of the 10X Podcast Group, the home of the skillful art of manipulation. We're thrilled to have you as part of our growing community. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Your likes and comments mean the world to us and help us reach a wider audience with our stories. Plus, with new episodes released every day, your feedback plays a vital role in shaping what we create. It truly makes a difference. Your loyalty and enthusiasm fuel our passion for crafting gripping tales, and we're so grateful for your support. Today, we're excited to present The Human Auction, a story that promises to keep you on the edge of your seat. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, The Bait. People think heroes wear capes. They don't. They wear expensive suits and wire transfer receipts. They sit in offices with city views and stroke their egos by throwing money at causes that make them feel righteous. Human trafficking is a big one. Nothing gets wallets open like a sob story about a helpless woman in chains, ripped from her home, waiting to be saved. I know because I built a business out of it. Not real trafficking, of course. That's messy, dangerous, and frankly bad for business. No, I sold something better, the illusion of trafficking. A fantasy for philanthropists. A spectacle for billionaires who wanted to save someone with the click of a button. All they needed was a tearful girl on a live stream, an anonymous account to send the funds, and the guarantee that their donation had secured her freedom. And who provided that guarantee? Me. For 5 years, I'd perfected the scam. The setup was simple. I scouted a girl who looked the part, young, vulnerable, foreign enough to seem exotic, but not so foreign that she'd be dismissed as untrustworthy. I offered her a cut of the deal, coached her on the script, made sure she could cry on command. Then I staged the auction. A dark room, a few grim-faced men in ski masks, a shaky camera feed broadcasting to a private forum. The buyers thought they were fighting against evil. In reality, they were just bidding against themselves. The highest donor would send millions to an offshore account, believing the girl was being rescued. Then I'd send them a well-edited, pre-recorded escape video, where the girl cried, thanked her mysterious savior, and disappeared into safety. After that, we split the take and went our separate ways. No one ever asked for proof beyond what I gave them. No one ever questioned whether they were being played. People see what they want to see, and nothing makes a person easier to manipulate than their own need to believe they're doing the right thing. I had never lost control of a con, until Leah, Singapore, 3 days earlier. I found her exactly where I knew I would, in a low-lit bar where desperate women met men who were desperate for something else. She wasn't working, at least not visibly. She didn't prowl like the other girls. She sat in the corner, nursing a drink she didn't seem interested in, eyes scanning the room as if waiting for something. I liked that. I slid into the seat across from her, setting my glass down with just enough force to make her look up. Leah. She arched an eyebrow, but didn't look surprised. You got the wrong girl. Do I? I let the moment stretch. I think I got exactly the right one. Her lips twitched, almost a smile. And what do you think you know about me? I know you're looking for an opportunity, I said, leaning forward. I know you're not afraid of a little risk. And I know you're smart enough to know when someone's offering you a deal that pays better than whatever you're waiting on here. She studied me for a moment. Then, with a deliberate slowness, she lifted her drink and took a sip. Keep talking. I did. I told her about the job, about the cut she'd get for playing the part of the kidnapped victim. $100,000 for a few days' work. All she had to do was follow my lead, act the part, and walk away when it was over. She listened without interrupting, turning the glass in her hands, watching the ice melt. When I finished, she finally smiled. What's the catch? There isn't one, I lied. The setup. 3 days later, she was tied to a chair in a windowless warehouse, mascara smudged, breathing hard. A single camera streamed her face to a forum full of anonymous, desperate bidders. I stood just out of frame, watching the numbers climb. 1 million. 2. 5. I barely had to say anything. Her performance did all the work, shaky breaths, frightened glances, lips trembling as she pleaded for someone to help her. It was perfect. Everything was perfect. Until the bid hit 10 million, and she whispered, just barely loud enough for me to hear. You set this up? Something in her tone made the hairs on my neck rise. And that's when I noticed it. The men around us weren't my usual crew. The auctioneer wasn't reading from my script. The feed wasn't being routed through my servers. And the money, that wasn't going into my accounts. Then the gavel came down. Sold. A cold dread sank into my gut. Leah turned her head, her dark eyes locking onto mine, and for the first time in my life, I didn't know whether I was looking at an accomplice or a goddamn executioner. Chapter 2, The Switch. The warehouse smelled like damp wood and sweat. Stale air, heavy with the stench of too many bodies, too much money, and too little morality. I had always been in control in places like this. I knew how to command a room, how to move through shadows and make people believe they were seeing something real when, in truth, I was pulling every string behind the curtain. Not tonight. Tonight, I was watching my own con play out, except I wasn't the one running it. Sold. The word still rang in my ears as the gavel struck wood. I stood there, heart hammering, my body stiff. My mind scrambled through 1,000 possible explanations. A glitch in the feed? An investor hijacking the auction? A double cross from one of my own crew? Nothing fit. The men in the room weren't mine. The auctioneer wasn't reading my lines. And the buyer, the smug bastard in the front row, dressed in an expensive three-piece suit, adjusting his tie as he pushed himself up from his chair, was definitely not one of my usual marks. He turned his head just enough for me to catch his profile. Late 40s, Mediterranean, slick back salt and pepper hair. Sharp jaw. The kind of face you'd see on the cover of a business magazine. The kind of hands that had never done any real work, but had signed off on plenty of destruction. Leah had gone still in her chair, breathing slow, deliberate. If she was scared, she didn't show it. She turned her head, those dark eyes locking onto mine. "You set this up?" she whispered again. Her voice was quieter this time, edged with something that made my skin prickle. Not fear. Accusation. I took a step forward, barely stopping myself from lunging toward the auctioneer, from grabbing the laptop running the stream, from yanking the cables and cutting the feed before the situation spiraled further out of control. But I didn't move fast enough. The buyer, Mr. Three-Piece Suit, turned, signaled to someone behind him. Two men stepped forward, both wearing dark suits, both built like they could snap a man's spine without breaking a sweat. "Secure the merchandise," the buyer said, voice cool, detached. Merchandise. That's what Leah was to him. That's what we were to him. The two enforcers stepped up to the stage, reaching for Leah's chair. She didn't resist. Didn't cry. Didn't beg. She only tilted her head slightly, the corner of her lips curling up as she said, clear as glass. "Counteroffer." Then she moved. Faster than I thought possible, she snapped her wrists free from the zip ties, slipped out of the chair like she was liquid, and before the nearest guard could react, she drove something sharp straight into his throat. The room erupted. Chairs screeched against concrete. Men shouted. Blood spurted in an arc across the stage. The second guard reached for his gun. Leah was already twisting behind him, kicking his knee out from under him. He hit the floor, hard, but not before he managed to get his pistol halfway drawn. My body finally caught up with my brain, instincts overriding the numb shock that had frozen me in place. "Move." I lunged forward, grabbed the laptop running the auction, and ripped every goddamn cable out. The live stream cut to black. The buyer cursed, furious, stepping back, barking orders at the remaining guards. I didn't stick around to listen. I ran. The maze of betrayal. The warehouse was a goddamn maze. Rows of crates, stacked metal containers, corridors that twisted and turned in ways that made no sense. I was fast, but my mind was running faster. Who set this up? How deep did the betrayal go? This wasn't just someone hijacking my scam. This was something bigger. Someone had known exactly what I did. They had copied it, perfected it, and used me as the bait instead of the fisherman. And Leah, she wasn't just some girl I'd picked out of a bar. She had played me. She had let me think she was another lost soul, desperate for cash, willing to play along. She had waited for this moment. I turned a corner and nearly slammed into a set of stacked crates. Swearing under my breath, I ducked behind them, pressing my back against cold metal. Footsteps pounded behind me. Shouts in three different languages. I slowed my breathing. Focused. I needed a plan. Fast. If they caught me, I wasn't walking out of here. The hunter and the hunted. I heard the soft crunch of footsteps before I saw her. Leah. She moved like a shadow, weaving through the chaos, her steps measured, precise. She wasn't running. She was hunting. A gun rested in her hand, stolen from the second guard she'd dropped. Blood dotted her skin, but she didn't seem to notice or care. She stopped a few feet from me. "I should put a bullet in your head," she murmured, almost thoughtful. I swallowed hard, forcing my voice to stay even. But you won't. She smiled. I should. I exhaled through my nose, trying to force some calm into my body. You needed me for something. Otherwise, I'd already be dead. A pause. Then she sighed. I do hate wasting assets, she admitted. And unfortunately for you, you're valuable. My pulse kicked. Valuable how? Not here. She glanced toward the distant sounds of men shouting, searching. If you want to live, you follow me. Now, I had two choices. Stay. Or walk straight into whatever trap she had waiting next. But considering the alternative was a bullet between the eyes, I didn't hesitate. I followed Liah. Into the dark. Chapter 3. The Hand That Feeds You. I followed Liah into the dark, my mind a storm of half-formed thoughts and unanswered questions. Everything I knew, everything I had built, had just shattered in front of me. My scam, my rules, my control? Gone. Someone else had taken my game and turned it against me. And worse, I had no idea who. I had spent years running cons, controlling every variable, making sure I was always the smartest guy in the room. But tonight, I was losing. And Liah. Liah was an entirely different beast than I had pegged her for. The escape. The warehouse was still alive with chaos behind us. Shouting voices, men scrambling, the echo of rapid footsteps bouncing off metal walls. The auction had turned into a bloodbath, and the moment I had pulled the plug on the livestream, all hell had broken loose. Now, it was only a matter of time before someone found us. Liah led the way, slipping through the maze of shipping containers like she had been here before. She moved like a woman who had navigated places like this her entire life, silent, purposeful, alert. I kept close, my heartbeat thudding in my ears. Finally, she ducked into a small passage between two rusted-out crates, pausing just long enough to glance back at me. Stay close. Don't talk. Don't breathe too loud, she whispered. I clenched my jaw and did exactly as she said. We moved quickly, cutting across the dimly lit storage space and toward the loading dock exit. From the outside, it would just look like another section of the docks, dark waters, cargo ships, forklifts abandoned in the dead of night. A clean getaway. Except when Liah reached for the door, she stopped cold. I felt it too. The shift in the air. The presence. Someone was already waiting for us. The warning shot. The first shot cracked through the air like a whip, slamming into the metal wall beside us. I ducked instinctively, my body moving on sheer survival instinct. Liah barely flinched. Instead, she smirked. Too slow, she murmured, turning her head toward the shooter. I followed her gaze, heart hammering. A man stood at the far end of the loading dock, his gun still aimed, the barrel smoking. I recognized him instantly. Anton Mendez. Not just a buyer. Not just a billionaire with a dark hobby. Anton was a broker. He wasn't some rich prick throwing money around to get his rocks off. He was the middleman between the money and the crime. If you wanted to buy a woman, a child, or a new identity, you went through Anton. He didn't care where the product came from, only that the transaction went smoothly. And tonight, the transaction hadn't gone smoothly. Anton sighed, lowering the gun slightly, but keeping his finger on the trigger. I don't like being made a fool of, he said, his voice smooth but edged with something darker. Liah exhaled slowly. Rolling her shoulders like this was inconvenient rather than life-threatening. Then maybe you should be faster, she quipped. My stomach twisted. What the hell was she doing? You killed two of my men, Anton continued, stepping forward. And my money is missing. Liah tilted her head. So, Anton's jaw ticked. So, I don't think you understand how much of a problem that is. Liah smiled, actually smiled, as she took a slow step forward. Let me guess, she purred. You're going to kill us, right? Anton's eyes flicked toward me. I don't care about him, he said dismissively. But you. His gaze hardened. You're going to explain exactly what game you're playing before I decide how painful this gets. I forced myself to swallow down the nausea rising in my throat. This was insane. We were seconds away from being shot, and Liah was playing chicken with a man who didn't bluff. Liah, I started, but she cut me off with a flick of her fingers. Then she did something that stunned me. She dropped her gun. It clattered against the ground between them, the sound deafening in the silence that followed. Anton blinked, his grip on his own weapon tightening slightly. Cute, he murmured. But you're still going to talk. Oh, I know, Liah said easily. Then she took another step closer, hands still raised. Anton barely had time to react before she moved. In a single, fluid motion, she kicked the gun up from the ground, caught it midair, and fired. The bullet hit Anton's knee, shattering bone. His scream ripped through the night. I took two steps back, adrenaline flooding my body, my mind racing to keep up with the sheer audacity of what I had just witnessed. Anton collapsed onto the dock, gun clattering from his grasp, hands flying to his leg as blood pooled beneath him. Liak crouched beside him, pressing the barrel of her stolen gun against his throat. "Tell me who set this up," she whispered. Anton gasped through the pain, sweat slicking his brow. "Fuck you." Liak didn't blink. She pulled the trigger. Click. An empty chamber. Anton's whole body flinched, his breath hitching. Liak tilted her head, watching him for a long, considering moment. Then she tossed the gun aside. She reached into his coat, pulled out his phone, and tossed it to me. "Call his boss," she ordered. I stared at her. "Are you?" She turned her head, and for the first time I saw it. The absolute lack of hesitation. The emptiness in her eyes. Liak was not a woman in trouble. She was the problem. And now, I was part of it. I swallowed hard and dialed. The call rang once. Twice. Then a voice, deep and unreadable, answered. "Anton." I forced my throat to work. "He's indisposed," I said. Silence. Then calmly. "Who is this?" Liak met my gaze. And smiled. I felt something sharp twist in my gut. I had just made a deal with the devil. And I wasn't sure I'd make it out alive. Chapter 4. A Deal with the Devil. The silence on the other end of the phone was thick. Not the kind of silence that meant confusion or surprise. The kind that meant calculation. Whoever was on the other end of the line wasn't scrambling to figure out what had happened. No panicked questioning, no yelling, no immediate threats. No, whoever this was, he already knew something had gone wrong. He was just waiting for me to say something stupid. I swallowed, gripping Anton's bloodstained phone. "He's indisposed," I repeated, keeping my voice steady, mimicking the kind of authority I used to command back when I was the one pulling the strings. The voice on the other end finally responded, calm and deliberate. "And who am I speaking to?" Liak's eyes flicked to me, sharp as a knife. I could see the warning in her gaze. "Don't lie. Don't fuck this up." I exhaled slowly. "Call me Flynn." A pause. Then a chuckle. Low, almost amused. "Flynn," the man said, rolling the name across his tongue like he was tasting it. "I assume Anton is no longer an active participant in this conversation?" I glanced at Anton's twitching form on the dock, his hands still clutching his mangled knee, blood pooling around him. He was still conscious, but not for long. I turned away. "No, he's not." Another pause. Then the voice on the phone spoke again, still eerily calm. "Interesting." That was it. No anger. No threats. Just interest. And that was when I knew. Whoever this was, he was worse than Anton. Much worse. The weight of a name. Liak stepped closer, tilting her head, listening intently to the way the man spoke. She didn't say anything, just let me handle it. Which meant she was testing me. She wanted to see if I could swim with the sharks without bleeding into the water. I clenched my jaw, steadying myself. "Who am I speaking to?" The man let another chuckle slip through the line. "Ah," he said. "You don't know, do you?" Something cold slithered down my spine. "No," I admitted. "But I assume I should." "I assume you should too," he said pleasantly. "After all, you've just made an enemy of a very expensive operation. And in my world, Flynn, I don't deal in mercy." Liak's jaw tensed. She recognized the voice. That meant I should too. I'd spent years running my cons, setting up fake auctions, scamming men like this out of their money before they ever got their hands on a real victim. And yet this was different. Because this was real. And if Liak knew who we were dealing with, that meant I had just stepped into a world I had no business being in. The man's voice softened, almost amused. "But since you have made the introduction so creatively," he continued, "I'll be generous." His next words were slow. Deliberate. "My name is Victor Costa." My stomach dropped. I knew that name. Anyone who operated in the underworld did. Victor Costa wasn't just a buyer. He wasn't just another player in the black market trade. He was the goddamn architect. If human trafficking had a CEO, it was him. He didn't buy girls. He didn't sell them. He owned the people who did. And now, he was interested in me. The devil's offer. "You're quiet," Victor said. I swallowed, forcing my voice to stay even. "Considering my options." He laughed softly. "Smart man. Unfortunately, your options are limited." A rustling sound crackled through the line. Papers, maybe. A cigarette lighting. Something that told me he wasn't worried. He was amused. "You see, Flynn," he continued, You've disrupted something very valuable to me. The money is one thing. 10 million isn't a small number to misplace. But the real issue is that you've killed my men, and I don't take kindly to setbacks. Leah's fingers twitched at her side, barely perceptible, but I caught it. She was waiting, calculating. She had an escape plan, but she needed me to stall. I took a slow breath. You're talking to me instead of killing me. That means you want something. Victor chuckled again, perceptive. The weight in his voice shifted. I need to know who you are, he said simply. Not just a name. Not just a scam artist. I need to know how you pulled this off. How you took my auction, my operation, and flipped it. Because you see men like you. He exhaled slowly, thoughtfully. They don't exist in my world. I tightened my grip on the phone. You want me to tell you how I did it? I said carefully. I want you to prove that you did it. Silence stretched. Leah's gaze locked onto mine. And then, very slowly, she shook her head. I clenched my jaw. If I talked, I became part of Victor's machine. If I didn't, he would hunt us down until there was nothing left to find. I needed a third option. I needed a way out. Victor waited, patient, unhurried. Finally, I spoke. I'll prove it, I said. But not over the phone. Leah's expression darkened, her fingers twitching toward the gun at her side. Victor let the moment stretch, then exhaled. Interesting, he murmured. Very well. Another pause. Anton's jet is still waiting at the airstrip, he said smoothly. You'll board it. You'll come to me. A beat. And you'll convince me that you're worth more alive than dead. My breath slowed. This was a trap. But refusing wasn't an option. Fine, I said. I'll see you soon. Victor chuckled, the sound like a blade sliding against bone. Let's hope so. Then the call went dead. I slowly lowered the phone, pulse thrumming, every nerve in my body alive with the realization that I had just made a deal with the devil. Leah exhaled sharply, rubbing a hand over her face. You're out of your fucking mind, she muttered. I turned to her, voice tight. You got a better plan? She was silent. Then, finally, she sighed. We need to move. We left Anton bleeding on the dock and headed toward the jet, straight into the lion's den. Chapter 5, Flight into Fire. The jet was waiting. It sat on the tarmac like a shark resting just beneath the waves, sleek, polished, and dangerous. The kind of plane that whispered money, power, death. I had never feared flying before. But as Leah and I walked toward that jet, every instinct in my body screamed that this was a one-way trip. The weight of no escape. We reached the foot of the stairs leading up to the cabin door. The engines thrummed low, a steady pulse beneath the still night air. A single man stood at the top of the stairs, arms folded, dressed in a tailored black suit. He wasn't holding a gun. Didn't need to. The confidence in his stance, the way his expression didn't shift as we approached. This was a man who didn't worry about things like survival. He knew that, one way or another, we weren't walking away from this clean. Leah stopped just short of the first step. I did too. The man tilted his head slightly, eyes flicking between us. Then, he reached into his jacket and pulled out a phone. He held it out. I didn't take it immediately. He sighed. Victor wants to speak with you before you board. I hesitated, then took the phone and brought it to my ear. You're late, Victor's voice greeted me, smooth as ever. I glanced at Leah. Traffic. Victor chuckled. Always so quick with a joke. I admire that. His voice darkened slightly. Shame you won't be laughing soon. I swallowed. Is this the part where you remind me what happens if I try to back out? Victor let a small, amused breath slip through the line. No, Flynn. This is the part where I tell you that you're already past the point of backing out. A beat of silence. Then softly. Get on the plane. The line went dead. I handed the phone back to the suit, locked eyes with him for a long second, then stepped onto the first stair. Leah followed without a word. We were in the lion's mouth now. And Victor was already chewing. A sky full of traps. Inside, the jet was pure luxury. Leather seats. Gold accents. A stocked bar. Victor had spared no expense in making sure that, if we were about to die, we'd do it surrounded by wealth. Leah slid into a seat across from me, her expression unreadable. The engines rumbled as the jet began to taxi, and I fought the urge to press my back into the seat like I could somehow disappear into it. I had been in dangerous situations before. I had played high-stakes games with dangerous men. But this wasn't a game anymore. This was real. Leah broke the silence first. Tell me you have a plan. I exhaled through my nose. Working on it. She gave me a flat look. Flynn. I met her gaze, and for the first time, I saw actual tension in her expression. She wasn't afraid. Not exactly. But she was thinking, calculating, and that meant one thing. She didn't have a plan either. The jet tilted slightly as we lifted off, the world outside shrinking into darkness. There was no going back now. Victor had us exactly where he wanted us. And he was waiting. The lie that saves or kills. The first hour of the flight passed in silence. Lia leaned back in her seat, eyes closed, but I knew she wasn't sleeping. I stared at the whiskey in my glass, swirling the liquid, my mind running through every possible angle. Victor wanted something from me. He needed something from me. If he had simply wanted us dead, he would have sent men to finish the job at the docks. Instead, he was bringing us to him, which meant there was still a move to make. I just had to figure out what the hell it was before we landed. The pilot's voice crackled through the cabin's intercom. ETA, 1 hour. 1 hour until we met the man who could decide if we lived or died. I took a slow sip of whiskey. Then, without looking at Lia, I spoke. We need a lie. Lia opened one eye. We're already living one. Not good enough. I leaned forward, elbows on my knees. Victor wants to know how I flipped the auction. How I hijacked his operation. He thinks I did it on purpose. Lia sat up slowly. And we let him keep thinking that. Her expression didn't change. But I saw the sharp glint in her gaze. She was considering it. You're saying we pretend you're a mastermind. I smirked, but it felt thin. I'm saying we pretend I'm useful. She was quiet for a long moment. Then she exhaled. You better sell it, she muttered. I lifted my glass in mock toast. To survival. She didn't smile. Neither did I. Because we both knew the truth. There was no survival in Victor Costa's world. Only debt. And one way or another, we'd have to pay. Chapter 6, The Man in the Shadows. The descent felt slower than it should have. The jet sliced through the night, engines humming beneath us like a predator breathing in the dark. Through the small window, I could see the lights of a private airstrip blinking in the distance, a lonely stretch of tarmac cut into the middle of nowhere. Victor Costa didn't meet people in cities. He met them in places no one would think to look for bodies. Lia hadn't said a word since our last conversation. She sat still, one leg crossed over the other, eyes locked on some invisible point in the distance. Thinking. Calculating. I didn't blame her. We were walking into a den of wolves, and I was betting our lives on a single lie. A lie that had to be perfect. I rolled my shoulders, steadying my breath as the plane banked lower. My fingers tapped absently against my thigh, my pulse slow but focused. I had spent years conning men like Victor Costa. The trick was simple. Never let them smell your fear. Welcome to hell. The wheels touched down with barely a bump. Smooth. Controlled. Like everything else in Victor's world. As soon as we stopped, the doors hissed open, and a gust of warm night air swept through the cabin. The scent of salt and jet fuel clung to the breeze. I pushed to my feet, adjusting my shirt. Lia rose without a sound, and we stepped toward the open hatch. The first thing I noticed was the lack of guards. That was Victor's way of reminding us who was in control. If we ran, we wouldn't make it 10 feet. If we fought, we wouldn't make it 5. Two black SUVs idled just off the tarmac, their headlights cutting long shadows across the asphalt. A man waited beside them. Not Victor. Too young. Too stiff. His suit was tailored, but he wasn't comfortable in it. He stood with the rigid posture of someone trying too hard to look important. I clocked the details immediately. Right-hand man. Enforcer. Maybe an executioner. Not the boss. But close enough to speak for him. Lia must have come to the same conclusion because she exhaled slowly through her nose, then gave me a sidelong look. We both knew what this was. A test. Flynn, the man called out as we approached, voice smooth but laced with steel. And Lia. He didn't ask our names. He already knew them. I gave him an easy smile, fake as hell but convincing enough to look real. You got us at a disadvantage, I said. You know who we are, but we don't know you. The man didn't smile back. My name isn't important. Lia let out a quiet scoff. That's cute. Do all of Victor's men practice the same dramatic speech patterns, or are you just trying extra hard to impress him? The man's jaw ticked. She had hit a nerve. Interesting. I tucked that information away for later and kept my posture relaxed. Victor's expecting us, I said. Unless this is the part where we get shot on the tarmac. The man studied me for a beat. Then finally he smiled. It wasn't friendly. It was the kind of smile a cat gives a mouse before it decides to bite. "Follow me." And just like that, the game had begun. Into the fire. The drive was silent. Lia sat beside me in the back of the SUV, one leg crossed over the other, fingers tapping lightly against her knee. Not nervous. Just measuring the seconds. The world outside the tinted windows was empty. No city lights. No traffic. Victor had built his kingdom in the shadows. The roads twisted through dense trees before finally opening up to reveal something that made my stomach tighten. The estate was massive. Not just expensive, designed. A towering mansion, surrounded by high walls and security cameras that tracked our movement as the gates groaned open. The driveway stretched for nearly half a mile, lined with perfectly trimmed hedges and statues that probably cost more than most people made in a lifetime. Lia inhaled quietly beside me. She wasn't impressed. She was reading the layout. Victor's security was impenetrable. If things went bad, we weren't walking out. The SUV rolled to a stop in front of the mansion's entrance. The driver killed the engine, and the man in the front seat turned to us. "Out." I didn't move immediately. Instead, I let a small smirk curl my lips, tilting my head slightly. "Not rolling out the red carpet?" The man didn't blink. "You're alive. Consider that your welcome gift." I sighed dramatically. "Fine, but next time, at least bring champagne." I stepped out. Lia followed. And then, finally, we saw him. Meeting the king. Victor Costa stood just inside the entrance, hands in his pockets, watching us with the expression of a man who already knew how this was going to end. He was older than I expected. Late 50s, maybe. Silver hair, lean frame, crisp black suit that looked effortless on him. But it was his eyes that caught me. Not cold. Not cruel. Worse. Curious. That meant he hadn't decided what to do with us yet. That meant we still had a chance. Victor smiled, slow and deliberate. "Flynn." I smiled back. "Victor." Lia didn't speak. She just watched him like a wild animal sizing up another predator. Victor exhaled through his nose, amused. "Come," he said, gesturing toward the grand hall behind him. "Let's talk." His tone was light, almost friendly. But I knew better. This was the part where we convinced him we were worth keeping alive. Or where he proved that we weren't. Either way, the night was far from over. Chapter 7. The Devil's Handshake. Victor led us through the grand hall like a man strolling through his own empire. Because in every way that mattered, that's exactly what it was. The mansion wasn't just wealth. It was calculated power. The walls were lined with oil paintings, some of them priceless, others, if I had to guess, stolen. A long, polished marble staircase wound up to a second floor, where darkened hallways stretched like veins into the heart of the house. Crystal chandeliers threw sharp, golden light across a floor made of polished black stone, and every step we took echoed in the vast space. There were no guards in sight, which meant there were more than we could see. Victor didn't rush. He moved at his own pace, like he already knew the ending to whatever game we thought we were playing. That kind of control, that kind of patience, that was a different kind of monster. He led us into a study, if you could even call it that. It was huge, lined with floor-to-ceiling bookshelves, a massive fireplace crackling at the far end, and a long mahogany table in the center. The scent of leather, whiskey, and burning wood curled in the air. Victor motioned lazily toward the chairs. "Sit." Neither Lia nor I moved right away. A small smile twitched at his lips. "Come now. If I wanted you dead, we wouldn't be having this conversation." I didn't let my hesitation show. I moved first, taking the chair directly across from him. Lia followed, slow and deliberate, lowering herself into the seat beside me. Victor settled in with a sigh, fingers lacing together as he studied us. The firelight cast long shadows across his face, turning the lines at the corners of his mouth into something almost amused. I didn't like that. Amused men weren't worried men, which meant he didn't see us as a threat. "Not yet." Victor exhaled softly. "So." His eyes flicked to me. "You're the man who stole from me." I let the words sit there for a second, watching him the way he watched me. Then, I leaned back slightly, spreading my hands. "Stole? That's a strong word." Victor chuckled. "Then what word should I use?" I smiled, but it wasn't a real one. "Let's call it an interruption of services." A beat of silence. Then, Victor actually laughed. It was short, quiet, but genuine. Lia didn't react. She was still, watching him the way a blade watches for the right moment to cut. Victor leaned forward slightly, elbows resting on the polished surface of the table. "I must admit," he said, tilting his head, "you're an interesting man, Flynn. That's what people tell me. Clever. Bold." He let a slow, deliberate pause fill the space. "Arrogant." I didn't blink. "Arrogance is only dangerous if it isn't backed by skill." Victor studied me for a long, long moment. Then he smiled again. "But skill," he murmured, "does not always equal wisdom." I exhaled slowly. This was a test. Every word. Every movement. Victor Costa wasn't the kind of man who killed impulsively. He weighed his options. He dissected them. And right now, I was an option. I kept my posture relaxed, but every muscle in my body was wired tight. I needed to stay ahead of him. Because if I wasn't useful, I was dead. The devil's proposal. Victor tapped a finger against the table. "Let's say I believe you," he mused. "Let's say you truly did hijack my auction, outplay my men, and steal from me." He leaned forward slightly. "The question is, why are you still breathing?" His voice was calm. Too calm. I felt Leah shift slightly beside me, and I knew she was ready to move. "Not yet." I held Victor's gaze. "Because I know how you really work," I said. Victor's smile didn't change, but his fingers stilled. I kept going. "You don't waste resources," I said smoothly. "You don't let a valuable asset go to waste." Victor tilted his head slightly. "Is that what you are, Flynn?" "I am if you let me be." The words were slow, intentional. I was betting everything on a single truth. Victor Costa only killed people who weren't useful. If I could convince him I was more valuable alive than dead, we had a chance. If I couldn't, then this study was the last room I would ever see. Victor drummed his fingers against the table. Then, after a long, unbearable silence, he exhaled through his nose. "You have my attention." Hooked him. But I wasn't safe yet. Now, I had to sell the lie. The bargain that costs everything. I leaned forward slightly. "I know how you think, Victor. I know you don't care about the money. You care about control." Victor's expression didn't change. I pressed forward. "You don't need a refund. You need someone who can flip the game. Someone who can do what I did on purpose." Silence. Then, Victor smiled. "Flynn," he murmured, "are you trying to sell me my own business model?" I shrugged. "I'm trying to sell you an upgrade." His fingers tapped against the table again, slower this time. "Interesting." Leah's breath was measured beside me. She knew, just like I did. This was working. Victor leaned back slightly, studying me. Then he nodded. "I'll consider it," he said. I exhaled slowly. And then, a gunshot. The bullet hit the chair beside me, ripping through the fabric. I moved instantly, pushing off the seat, grabbing Leah's wrist as we both dived sideways. Another shot. Chaos. The guards were suddenly everywhere, men stepping from the shadows, weapons drawn. Victor hadn't moved. He just watched. Leah hit the floor, twisting, grabbing the gun from the nearest guard before snapping his wrist back with a sickening crack. I hit the ground rolling, grabbing the edge of the table, flipping it on its side, just as another bullet whizzed past my head. Victor's voice cut through the chaos, calm. Controlled. "Enough." The gunfire stopped instantly. I was breathing hard. Leah was already half risen, gun in her grip, eyes burning. Victor stood slowly. He smoothed down his suit. Then he smiled. "Congratulations, Flynn." I exhaled, blood pounding in my ears. "For what?" Victor's smile widened. "For making the cut."